All right, thank you for coming, everyone. My name is Will Trachman. I'm one of the co-chairs of the Colorado Federal Society. You met Joe Peters, my co-chair, on the way in, and our vice president, Ruba Nasrallah. We are honored to have you all here tonight. It's great to have friends on both sides of the aisle, and it's been wonderful working with the American Constitution Society to plan this event and to develop the questions. And it's been terrific to have the help of our moderator tonight, Sean Boyd. I just want to make one note before I turn it over to Sean. In this day and age, in the times that we live in, and especially this month, where a lot of the times it's hard to be with our friends on the other side of the aisle or to leave the passion of heated issues behind, it's nice to be together and debate issues and debate principles. So I want to thank you all, and with that, I'm going to turn it over to Sean.
Thank you. Well, I moderate and I watch, unfortunately, a lot of debates. I was with these guys just last week, and then we've got another one in a couple weeks. But rarely do I see questions as thoughtful as the ones that the Federalist Society, no, truly, truly, with input from the American Constitution. Oh, I see. I thought you were laughing at that. They really are thoughtful questions. The American Constitution Society, you know, gave input for these questions. So I think the next hour we're going to get some good insight on what these two candidates see as the role of the AG. So the rules. You will each have 90 seconds to answer the question, and then you'll get a 30-second rebuttal. Good?
How much?
Good to go?
30.
That's it. Keep it short. We've got a lot to get at. All right, so before we get to the tough questions, I would like you to tell us, who are your legal mentors?
Can I go first?
Go ahead.
This is a critical question, because let me start by saying how important mentoring is. I spoke to the president's leadership class at CU this week, and I made a point of emphasizing that to be successful in life, you need mentors. None of us find our path by ourselves. I've had a lot of mentors in my life. I want to start by talking about acknowledging Ken Salazar, because he's someone who has been a critical mentor for me on this journey. I've never run for office before. This is the scariest, hardest thing I've ever done. And Ken Salazar said to me in the spring of 2017, as I was thinking about this, Phil, you need to do this. You need to be the lawyer for the people of Colorado, because this job is a unique job that gives you the chance to represent the people of Colorado, protecting their rights on a range of issues, from protecting water rights, to standing up for consumers, to standing up for equal justice. And when Ken was our attorney general, that's what he did. So he's both a mentor to me, and he's a role model, because he demonstrated in this office how you can do things to help people. It was his concern that we had interactions with police and communities that could get better if we had better training. So he worked to create the Peace Officer Standards and Training Program, which is now part of the Attorney General's office. And Ken regularly has been checking up to say, how are you doing, how are you holding up? And that's what mentors are, people who can give you guidance and care about you. And I've got to say, one point of personal privilege, there are a number of students here today, former students, who I've been able to be a mentor for. And what I talk about mentor-mentee, it's not like, oh, this person just helps you. It's a two-way street that's meaningful. And I want to tell all the people here who I've mentored how much you've meant to me and how much you inspire me. And I want to say, as Attorney General, I'm going to take this part of the job very seriously, to be a mentor for future lawyers and a coach in the office. Because at our best, lawyers work together, we help each other, and we help solve problems. And that's what I'll do as Attorney General.
Thank you, Phil. George? Your legal mentors.
Are we not clapping in between? Is that part of the rule?
Yeah, well, no, we're just going to keep this moving, okay?
I've got two that come to mind. One is a former supervisor of mine at the Jeffco DA's office. He was perhaps the most ethical attorney I think I've ever worked with. He was a guy that said, I want to be known as the prosecutor that if you had a client who was innocent or overcharged, that attorney would say, oh, good, we have you as a prosecutor. But if you were a person who represented someone who'd done horrible wrong, you'd say, oh no, we have you as a prosecutor, because you'd hold us accountable. The guy's name is Brian Boatwright, and he's on the Supreme Court right now in our state. But the other one, maybe more important, more personal and poignant to me, is my mom. My mom grew up a farm girl in between Pittsburgh and Philadelphia in Pennsylvania, was raised to believe that if she did everything right, she could be a farmer's wife or maybe a secretary. But that's not how my mom was built. And at 5'1", she was like, if you ever watched Doctor Who, she was like the TARDIS, really small on the outside, but on the inside, like huge. And she went to Washington, D.C. She got a job in the Pentagon, met my dad during the Vietnam War. They got married, had kid, me, moved to Colorado, put herself with my dad's help as an undergrad, master's, and then decided when she was a chief investigator for the Office for Civil Rights out here in Denver, she wanted to go to law school. We thought that meant we were going to be rich. Those of you that are laughing are attorneys who know that that doesn't mean you're going to be rich. And instead, when she got that law degree, and I can't read that because I don't have my glasses. Is it saying keep talking? Because it's, okay, good. Sorry.
I'll tell you.
All right.
I'll tell you.
She ended up spending her time working pro bono on behalf of children as a GAL and going into hospices to do powers of attorney and wills for AIDS patients who were dying. And at the time, when I was a kid, I don't think I understood it. But I think growing up in that household and the idea of doing right for right's sake, the idea of representing those who are the most vulnerable and the most in need, I gotta believe that that has played a role in the career that I have chosen. And I will take both of those mentors, both of those examples with me to be our state's next attorney general. Thank you.
Thank you. So now to the tougher questions, right? Why do you believe we elect an attorney general in Colorado instead of using the appointment system as some other states in the federal government? We're going to start with you, George, this time.
I'm not sure I need all 90 seconds for this. I think it's pretty obvious, and that is you are going to be beholden to the person that puts you in power. And so if it's a political appointment from a governor, that's the person who's bidding you do. But if you're elected by the people, if you're chosen by your constituents, that's to whom you owe your position and your authority. And for a position as critical as Attorney General, the state's top enforcer of our laws, top protector of our Constitution, you want there to be very little between you and your ultimate client, which is the people of the state of Colorado. I think politically appointed prosecutors, politically appointed attorneys general is not the right formula for Colorado. You want someone, especially in a state like Colorado, a state that during my entire life has been a state of balance. Do you know we're the only state in the country that has a Democrat governor and a Republican attorney general? Been that way almost my entire life. We did have a Republican governor once named Bill Owens, and we had a Democrat attorney general named Ken Salazar. We have always been a state of balance, and in part, that's because we elect the people that have the greatest influence on the greatest portions of our state government, and we should keep that going.
You don't have to use up all the time if you don't want to.
Boom.
Phil.
Thank you, Sean. This is an important point because it underscores the discretion that the Attorney General has. There are a range of issues that the Attorney General has to decide where they come down to represent Colorado, to represent all of you. Let's start with protecting our rights. Does our Attorney General stand for Roe versus Wade and protecting reproductive rights or not? That issue could well become before the Supreme Court. I'll be an Attorney General who stands up for equal rights for all and protecting reproductive rights for women. I'll also stand up for people, regardless of your sexual orientation or gender identity, against discrimination. The question about whether our civil rights laws ban discrimination in employment based on your sexual orientation, that will be before our Supreme Court. Where does the lawyer for Colorado stand? I know where I stand. I stand for equal treatment for everybody. We also have an attorney general who makes critical decisions protecting people as consumers. Do you sue pharmaceutical companies who lied to people, made money, and got people hooked on opioids? I will. And finally, where do you stand on climate change, protecting our land, air, and water? I'll stand for addressing it.
Do we have a rebuttal, George?
Yeah, I'm not sure how that addresses why we elect an attorney general, but I will tell you that those issues, I don't differ too much on those issues. I'm not here to try to shrink or truncate anybody's liberties. I stand for them. I will defend them. But what you'll get with an elected district attorney through this process, especially me, is someone who doesn't seek to be an ideological Don Quixote, trying to find some other political windmill to tilt at, or be some partisan hack who's trying to accomplish objectives that can't be won over in the legislature or Congress. I'm going to be an attorney general for the state of Colorado, all of it. And I will be bound by your will. And your will is expressed through our laws, both at the legislature and through the initiative process. And that's how I'll govern as attorney general. Thank you.
Phil?
Here's why it's relevant. You need to know where people stand. Are you for or against Roe versus Wade? Are you against discrimination in employment based on sexual orientation? Are you for taking on pharmaceutical companies for lying to people? The people elect the people's lawyer based on their preference. That's why it's elected, because to represent the people need to be able to make an informed choice. I've put out on my website, philforcolorado.com, my views on a range of issues. It's important to know where your attorney general stands so you elect one who represents you. And that's what we need to do. And doing that isn't being a political hack. It's being the people's lawyer. Because people are concerned about these issues, their rights as citizens and consumers and people who want clean air, clean water, and public lands. There's so much authority this job has to do things or not do things for all parts of our state. I'm committed to using that authority in innovative, creative ways to help the people of Colorado.
Okay. Is there any provision of Colorado law or proposed initiative you know of that you would not defend or enforce, Phil?
I believe the question is there a provision of Colorado law that I, as we stand here today, believe is unconstitutional? Because that's the only criteria by which you don't defend something. And that's something that any attorney general would need to come to very reluctantly. Ken Salazar had to make that decision because at that point, then Governor Owens signed an unconstitutional gerrymander. And Ken Salazar told Governor Owens, as his lawyer, this violates our Constitution. We can't do it. Governor Owens signed it anyway, and Ken Salazar did what he then had to do, said, I can't defend it, I'm going to challenge it. I don't know of, as we stand here today, such a case. What I can say is that has to be a case when you conclude that a coordinate branch of government did something that is, to your mind, clearly unconstitutional. I would do the job as a people's lawyer, and I'll give you an example. It came up a lot in my primary. There's a lawsuit against Tabor saying it's unconstitutional. I happen to think that Tabor has a fiscal straitjacket effect because of the so-called ratchet effect that's about to get us in trouble, and we'll need to go back to the ballot box to fix it. But we don't fix it by having an attorney general take a position on constitutional litigation that is actually opposed to a standing Supreme Court precedent. Because this is the lawyer for the people whose first commitment is to democracy and the rule of law.
Thank you. George?
Yeah, I'm not aware of any. I do think this is a critical issue for anyone that seeks this seat because, as we've seen across the country, there is a trend, and it's Republican and Democrat alike, to try to weaponize the Attorney General's office and to turn it into some sort of extra senator or treat AG like it stands for assistant governor. The Attorney General should not be in the business of advancing policies outside of their normally delegated authority. We have a legislature for that. We have a governor for that. But I think it's more than just saying, look, I don't see that there are any laws on the books that I believe are unconstitutional enough not to defend or challenge. It's how you would implement them. So for instance, the environment is a critical issue to me as a Coloradan. And my kids are all scouts. We have camped all over this place, and I want their kids and their kids to enjoy the same beauty. And I know that the COGCC, the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, can be controversial in terms of what they do, but what they cannot be is illegal. They are a lawful entity. They are a client of the Attorney General's office. And no matter what the next Attorney General thinks about fracking, no matter what they think about their permitting and oil and gas exploration process, it is a client of the Attorney General that they are duty-bound to defend unless their conduct is unconstitutional. And so it would be crazy to suggest that the Attorney General should go out and advise cities and counties to take up arms against COGCC or counsel them on how to push back against a client. That is not supporting the rule of law. That is not standing up for constitutional and legal portions of our state government. independent of policy, independent of preference, I feel bound by the laws that we have imposed on each other.
Thanks. We have a 30-second rebuttal now.
I think George just asked me a question, and I'll give you my answer. The lawyer for the people is the lawyer for county governments, too, which is why it was wrong when our attorney general sued Boulder County when they were working on protecting their citizens, rather than talk to them first. That's unprofessional. I wouldn't want any lawyer in this room to do it. I will advise local governments how to follow the law and protect their people. As for the litigation I think George is referring to, the Martinez case, our attorney general gave bad legal advice to the Colorado Oil and Gas Commission, leading it down a bad road. I won't do that.
George?
Yeah, look, that's just not accurate. When you're the attorney general, you can claim to be for the people. And my God, I've spent 24 years in one way or another standing up and saying George Brockler for the people of the state of Colorado. But the people are the government. And the individuals you protect are only through the laws that are passed, not through your good ideas, your wills, or your whim. The bottom line here is that the COGCC, a client, held an unusual public vote and at the request of the governor, unanimously voted to appeal a decision of the Martinez case to the Supreme Court, a lawful directive to an attorney. One of us would feel bound by their client's lawful wishes. One of us would substitute their judgment for their client's wishes. One is activism. The other is an attorney general.
Plays into my next question, actually. I'm going to talk about these activist AGs, which we have talked about in the past. When is it appropriate for the attorney general on behalf of the state of Colorado to sue the federal government or another state? George, you're up first.
That's a good question. Here's what I don't want to do. I don't want to become like the attorneys general that we have seen over the past 15 years that seem to want to link hands to advance some cause so radical they can't get it through the state legislature or through Congress. Instead, I would rather take the position that I am a defender of all Coloradans and our laws and push back against federal overreach in whatever form that it takes. It could be the waters of the United States, which is an administrative rule, not a congressional act that sought to hijack 93% of the jurisdiction over our water. That is not the role of the federal government, and an attorney general should push back on that, and ours did. But so too would I push back against a federal government under an attorney general Sessions that sought to impose federal law over the top of us on an issue where we share jurisdiction, like regulated recreational marijuana. Agree or disagree, 55% of us put it in the Constitution. And that alone makes it worthy of defense and worthy of a vigorous defense by an attorney general. So for me to defend these things and push back against the federal government, hear me. I don't care who's in the White House, Trump, Obama, whoever comes next. I didn't run for this office because of who's in the White House. I ran for this office because of who's in Colorado. Thank you.
It's Phil.
To correct your record, George, you ran for this office because you dropped out of the governor's race. And that is not my situation. This was the office I chose to run for because this is the office that gets to be the lawyer for all the people, protecting your rights. The law is an important tool to protect people. What was wrong that Cynthia Kaufman did in that litigation was giving wrong legal advice. She led the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation down the wrong path. The job is to give the right legal advice that protects people, and that means when the Affordable Care Act that protects people who have pre-existing conditions is not defended and enforced by our federal government, the lawyer for the people needs to protect people. And this is the one job that can protect people when our federal government isn't doing its job, whether it's how they treat Dreamers, separating families at the border, or asking a question on the census that violates the Constitution. It's our Attorney General who's the lawyer for the people and can defend our constitutional rights. What's critical in this moment, when we've seen a number of examples, whether it's constitutional protections, consumer protections, or protecting our land, air, and water, government agencies can't do whatever they want. If they violate the Constitution or the law, they have to be able to be held accountable in court. That's the way our legal system works. So what's my test? Does it hurt the people of Colorado? And is it illegal? If it hurts people and it's illegal, I'll protect people, and I'll take on the federal government.
Thanks, Phil. He gave some examples, George. You have a 30-second rebuttal.
Yeah, that feels pretty activist when it's you determining what is harm to Colorado. That is not the role of an attorney general. And I remember the ad, Phil. I saw it a million times during the primary against Joe Salazar. You decided to run because of who got elected president, and I think Colorado deserves more than that. And frankly, as the only person that's ever practiced Colorado law and had Colorado clients, I know what it means to give advice and have that advice rejected by clients. So if the COGCC gets what you believe is the correct advice and says, we still want to move forward with an appeal, you're bound by that decision. There is no alternative to an attorney general substituting their decision for a client. That is activism. An attorney general should be bound by the law and the Constitution and not what they think is harm, and not what they think the federal government is doing wrong, and not what they think the powers of the state should be. That's activism.
So I will be active in protecting Coloradans. And from the beginning of this presidency, we've seen the rule of law violated. Banning people's entry into this country because of their religion, that is unconstitutional. That I will fight against. Not defending a law passed by Congress and upheld by the Supreme Court violates the constitutional requirement that the president shall take care that the law is faithfully executed. I will fight against that for Coloradans.
So,
and let me
go ahead.
Just I do a 30
go
seconds.
Ahead.
And let me make this important point. I don't get to just make it up. I have to convince a court of law that our federal government itself broke the law. It sounds like George's view is that the federal government breaks the law, they get to do that. That's not my view. If they don't protect people as the law requires, there's a check on that behavior. If they violate the Constitution, there's a check, and your state AG can protect you and be that check.
Thank you. So, Phil, you touched on this already with the example from Boulder, but when is it appropriate for the Attorney General, on behalf of the state of Colorado, to sue a local government?
Let me pick up that example, because obviously it's one that's in people's minds. Let's just underscore the context here. Our Attorney General didn't pick up the phone to talk to Boulder County. I've advised counties on a range of issues. And I'll tell you this. The lawyer for the people, their first duty is to give legal advice. To sue a county, and this answers your question, that's a last resort. So I sue counties only when absolutely necessary, and you've gone through other alternatives. What was happening in that lawsuit wasn't the rule of law, wasn't responsible lawyering, it was political games. Our current attorney general decided, I'll make a punching bag of Boulder County. And here's what happened. Weeks after the suit was filed, it was moot because the issue that was the basis of the suit was already being addressed, but they didn't care to pick up the phone to ask about it. I won't do that to any county government, no matter who leads. On a range of important issues, our attorney general's office needs to provide legal counsel and guidance on broadband, on water, on the opioid epidemic, and oil and gas. My commitment is to lead by providing that counsel and working collaboratively together. And only in extreme situations would I consider suing a county.
So if you give advice and they don't take your advice, and so they're out of compliance, would you sue then in the case of Boulder?
I wouldn't rule out this action, but it has to come when it's plainly necessary that the body is acting in a lawless manner. That wasn't close to the case here. And this action, I believe, was unjustifiable.
Okay, thank you. George?
Well, as you can imagine, we disagree here. Look, the bottom line is I agree with collaboration, I agree with conversation, and my guess is if you had General Kaufman here or any of the people from the Division of Natural Resources and their attorneys, they would tell you that while Cynthia may not have had a phone call with the commissioners, there was no doubt in Boulder's mind where the Attorney General came down on this issue. Same thing with Longmont and other places that took such votes. And I think the question by Sean is appropriate, and that is, what do you do when your county makes the decision to pass an ordinance that is clearly in conflict with established and valid state law? And you can collaborate all you want, but at some point, and not an extreme position, you have to protect the jurisdiction of your actual client, because Boulder ain't it. It's the COGCC, and it's state law. And we're either going to defend the state law vigorously every time it is attacked, or we're going to pick and choose when we think it's the right outcome for us to stand up for. One is an attorney general. The other is an activist.
So thank you, George. You're not saying you would never sue.
I have not said
in this case, even.
I've not said I'd never sue. First this case, then more generally. This case, it was moot 3 weeks later. There's a great legal expression, res ipsa loquitur, the thing speaks for itself. It speaks for itself. If the case was moot 3 weeks later, the lawsuit was unnecessary. This was not a good case for a lawsuit. But as for George's talking point, a great talking point, then I assume George will be very quick to sue when a sheriff says, I'm not going to enforce our gun laws and do a background check, because that would be against Colorado law. But my answer is the same there. There's a great expression, you can catch more bees with honey than vinegar. I start by calling up the sheriff and say, we have a requirement under our law you need to enforce, that everyone needs to get a background check. I've heard concerns you're not enforcing it. That's not about activism. It's about how government works. My approach to governance is a collaborative one that starts with picking up the phone and talking to people. It includes building relationships with people all across the state, from county commissioners to sheriffs.
Thank you. We're going to continue on this whole activist theme that we've got here. Are there any present disputes in which you intend to initiate or join suit against the federal government if you become attorney general? I know you've kind of talked hypothetically here, but are there any current ones, concrete ones?
I think it ends up becoming the other way around, in part because I think what we've seen out of this administration, love them or hate them, there has been a real effort to undo some of the federal overreach that generated as many lawsuits as it did under the prior two-term president. In terms of the lawsuits that may not be against the federal government that I want to take a strong look at and continue to pursue, certainly the lawsuit that General Kaufman recently filed against Purdue Pharma, I want to get a fresh set of eyes on that, just like the case I inherited after I won the nomination for district attorney, the Aurora Theater case. No attorney who has been there or done that would ever agree to file a lawsuit without looking at all the evidence, nor would they ever agree to take over a lawsuit and follow the same direction without taking a look at all of the evidence and sitting down and going through the claims. And that's what I'd do here.
Thank you.
So George has a chance for rebuttal. I'm going to mention four lawsuits that I would take on. I'll add a fifth maybe for bonus. And I'm curious if George is willing to say he would take those on, because we've had a federal government do things that hurt Colorado, and that's illegal. First, separating families at the border. Immigrants are entitled to due process of law, not having their kids taken away from them. I challenge that as Attorney General. Second, Dreamers. They were given a promise. Give up all your information. Tell us who you are. We'll put you the back of the line, and we won't deport you. The threat now is to take that information, put them at the front of the line. There's a lawsuit saying that was illegal and unconstitutional. I would join that to protect the Dreamers. Number three, the Affordable Care Act. It protects people with pre-existing conditions. I've talked to people whose kids' lives are saved because of that protection. Our Justice Department in Washington's not protecting it. I will, as your Attorney General. Fourth, we in Colorado developed this methane rule to protect our air quality and address climate change. That meant our oil and gas companies were following it. But two-thirds of the methane emissions comes from surrounding states. So the EPA's methane rule, based on ours, which we didn't have to follow, is critical, is important. I would fight for that method rule and stop the effort to get rid of it.
Thank you.
And the bonus one quickly is, I'd fight to protect bears' ears.
Thank you. George, 30-second rebuttal.
Yeah, look, one of the things you have to consider when you decide who wants to be an activist and who wants to be an attorney general is what standing do you have to take up these issues? None of Bear's Ears is here in Colorado. Unless you can find a family, and I'm opposed to separating families at the borders, but unless it's the southern border of Colorado that it's happening to, there is no standing to stand up for people who aren't Coloradans or aren't here as residents. The idea that we're going to stand up and defend an administrative rule by the EPA that dictates to us the quality of our air when we can do that and have done that ourselves, those bureaucrats 1,500 miles away, they don't know better than we do. We know better than we do. As Attorney General, I oppose the idea of deposing these kids who know no other home than America, than Colorado. But that is a federal immigration issue. And if we're going to pick and choose which laws we'll support and defend, I'm anxious to hear how my opponent will carve a part of the office out to advise cities and counties how to push back against the enforcement of federal immigration law while withholding information if your goal is to defend the federal government.
Thank you. Bill?
I just want to be clear. It sounds to me like there's not a single action of our federal government that George is willing to challenge. I want to hear which one it is. The health care law affects all Coloradans who have pre-existing conditions or kids have pre-existing conditions. And our Justice Department is not defending us. That's why state AGs matter in this moment, because this job can do that. As for immigration law, here's what Colorado law says. Sheriffs can hold people for violations of Colorado law. They're not authorized to hold people because the INS wants to deport them.
Yeah, I agree.
This is something that really is important. You can have Department of Homeland Security saying, we want you to hold someone, but they can't make our sheriffs do their work. And my defense is to tell sheriffs here in Denver, you don't work for the Department of Homeland Security. You work for the state of Colorado. You follow our laws.
Briefly, because he did ask this question, are there any of those cases that he brought up that you would join?
Listen, I don't think it's the AG's job to protect the legacy of any president. You can't stand up here and say, I want to defend the federal government's Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, which, by the way, I agree. The U.S. Attorney General must defend that. I agree with that. But it's not the job of the AG to stand up for that, just like it's not the job of the AG to stand up and take on non-client cities and counties and tell them, here's how you can beat the immigration system. Stop sharing information with a law enforcement agency. I'll stand up to the federal government when they infringe on our rights and our sovereignty, but I am not going to defend federal law at the expense of our Congress or our president or the elected representatives we had. You want to change Obamacare? You want to change the enforcement? Vote for a new president. Vote for new congressmen. But to expect an attorney general to all of a sudden become this rogue warrior that's going to defend some federal policies and others, that's not this job, and that's not who I'm going to be.
I take that as a no, but we'll move on. One underappreciated aspect of the role of the Office of AG is in advising various agencies of the executive branch about how to interpret and apply statutes that may be unclear to it. If a law is unclear or ambiguous, what factors will you consider and what methods of interpretation will you apply? Phil?
This is important, and we're with the Federalist Society, so we're all textualists now. I start with the text of the statute. It's crucially important. That's what was enacted. Now, many statutes, like the antitrust laws, for example, one I know a little bit about, start with broad language, like monopolization. That calls for interpretive judgment. The way I would use my interpretive judgment is with an eye to how it affects the people of Colorado, because this is about protecting people and the public health, the rights of consumers. What we need is to work together, and this is important because you've got all these agencies, the Public Utility Commission, the Insurance Commission, our Department of Health and Environment, they turn to the Attorney General's office and say, how do we interpret and make statutes work? And my principle here, I'm not going to interpret it because this is what we've always done. Often government's not Democrats versus Republicans. It's inertia or autopilot versus thinking with an innovative mindset. And so another principle of mine is I'm going to bring a fresh perspective and ask, what's the best way we interpret a particular regulatory statute to serve the people of Colorado? And when a lawyer says, well, we've always done it this way, I will say, well, show me what the basis for that is, because maybe there are better ways to do it.
George?
Well, I think what I just heard is the door is open to reinterpret our rules and regulations to fit what an individual thinks is the right way to go about governing Colorado. That is not what we need out of an attorney general. And I agree with starting with the text. But the next place to go isn't your own interpretation of those words. The next place to go is the body that drafted and adopted those rules and regulations to determine what their spoken intent was, what the history of this piece of legislation, rule, or regulation was. And that's where I'd turn. And yes, history is part of that as well. And if it's not, if we're not bound by those three major areas, then every new attorney general can take office and say, I've got a new interpretation for you on these rules. That should be left to the rulemaking bodies. That should be left to the legislature, not to an activist attorney general.
Bill, 30 seconds for the rebuttal.
One of the great things about being on the campaign trail is you meet lots of people in groups. And one was a business group who said to me, we've got this regulatory system that's going on, and they're subjecting us to price regulation. And I said, wait a minute, this is a competitive industry. Why is there price regulation? And the person said, because we've always done it. And I said, well, is it required by the law? And the person said, I don't know. You could call that activism, or you can call it common sense. What I want to bring is thoughtful, careful, deliberative approaches to how the People's Law Office works on behalf of the people. And that means I'm going to demand the highest quality legal work we can get. One of the things I learned from Justice Ginsburg is what perfection in legal work looks like. Now, I rarely have attained it in my own practice, in my own work, but I know what it looks like. And I'm going to work as hard as we can to have a law office that does the highest quality work for the people of Colorado.
Thank you. You don't have anything to say? Okay. That is rare for you.
Saving us time.
Okay, nice.
Look,
some of us out there are interested in the Yankees A's score, so I'm trying to free us up for that. By the way, go Rockies.
Stay focused.
Yes, that's pandering. Go Rockies.
All right. What types of criminal activity in Colorado do you think should be highest priority for the Attorney General as Chief Law Enforcement Officer to investigate and prosecute? George?
Well, I think right now, and remember that we have 22 separately elected district attorneys who do most of the tackling and blocking for most criminal justice, but where the Attorney General's office can play an indispensable critical role is in trying to tackle those crimes that are burgeoning everywhere that require a great investment of resources and coordination and leadership for places of the state that don't have them. Now listen, I've been around this state numerous times on this campaign, and I've heard the same thing everywhere, and that is folks that don't live where we do here believe they're a second Colorado, that they're an afterthought, that every single issue under the Gold Dome starts and stops with an analysis of how does it impact Boulder and Denver. One way to tackle that is to acknowledge that on the Western Slope, an epidemic that I thought we had done a good job of starting to tamp down in the mid-90s was methamphetamine. And it's exploding everywhere on the Western Slope. Black market marijuana grows go all around the state. And the difference is twofold. The meth isn't necessarily being made here. It's being trucked up here through our porous southern border. Same thing with heroin. The heroin's not being produced from Colorado's poppy fields because we ain't got them. They're coming up from Mexico. And the black market marijuana grows that require labor-intensive expertise and resources to tackle are sprouting up in places like Huerfano County, one of the poorest per capita counties in the state, where they have far more square mileage than they do well-intentioned, hard-charging law enforcement officers. I want us to take this office and decentralize it, put regional offices out there to support local law enforcement, not to supplant their judgment. And along the way, we're going to tackle human trafficking the way we've done it in my office. We're going to expand it to include more than sex trafficking. We're going to tackle labor trafficking, which we know is taking place out on the plains. And we're going to have a more robust presence supporting local law enforcement and their endeavors to keep their communities safe.
Thank you. Bill.
It's really important that we in Colorado start from facts, and George and I both start from the same place, that the level of criminal prosecution that our attorney general does, it's less than 10% of what the office does. So we need to have that in context. George said it well. The district attorneys, they're the engines. We need an attorney general's office that does what George says, which is complement that important work in a few areas that we can add value. Critically important to me is environmental crimes, an area that's been de-emphasized by our current attorney general. That unit was started by Ken Salazar, a mentor of mine. I'll make sure to restart that up when I'm attorney general. What I also want to make sure we do is take on identity theft and elder abuse. This is an issue that district attorneys alone are not well situated to address. But as our attorney general's office, we can help working with them to address this important crime. Identity theft is actually the number one rising crime nationwide and has been for some time. Also, I want to underscore that we can, as a state, lead in criminal justice reform. We're putting opioid users in jail in Alamosa County. That's 92% of the people who are there. When I win this lawsuit against the pharmaceutical companies, we'll get money that we can use for drug treatment so we can start giving people who are opioid users this alternative of drug treatment, not putting them in jail. That's how we reform criminal justice.
Listen, the elder abuse thing is real. As the guy that started the elder abuse unit in the 18th Judicial District, along with the cold case unit, the domestic violence unit, human trafficking team that we had never had before, I know well how not only to tackle this problem, but to support the jurisdiction that don't have the resources to do it. But, you know, the difference can't just be Alamosa County. I asked the sheriff in Arapahoe County, what are we doing with people who are just straight here on addiction possession issues? He says 1.8% of the jail. So I agree, we can't incarcerate or arrest our way out of this problem, but we cannot deny the fact that criminal justice is an important component of what the AG does and supports. And it's only 10% if you divide up the way the office is categorized by 10 sections. If you add up the attorneys that do criminal prosecution, that do criminal appeals, that do homeland security, that tackle all the aspects of fraud that have criminal-like components, you approach over 100 attorneys in the Attorney General's office, but more than that, the Attorney General's office enforces the law civilly and criminally, and as the only guy who's done a trial and litigated cases at the municipal, state, federal, and military level, I'm not just a guy that's gonna have to rely upon advice from people who've done something I haven't. I've done it, and I'm gonna keep on doing it as your Attorney General. Thank you.
So let's talk about trial litigation, and let's talk about the office. Last time an attorney general litigated a trial in court, if you said 1860, you got it right. You're leading office of 500 people. Your job's to be a leader. Your job is to open and oversee investigations, which I've done at the Department of Justice on consumer protection matters. Your job's to provide legal advice to governmental agencies, which I've done for our last two governors. Your job's to work on regulatory matters, which I've done and I'm a national expert in. And your job is to work hard on appellate matters. There's more criminal appeals than criminal prosecution, and I've got a strong background in appellate law. You need a lawyer with a wide range of legal experience and the leadership experience to lead this office on behalf of the people of Colorado. That's what my experience is, and that's the type of attorney general I'll be for the people of Colorado. So,
I was just curious, the 1860 is the last time an AG was
That's
in the courtroom.
Correct.
But the attorneys for the AG
Absolutely.
Are in there all the
yes.
time
and
on these cases.
Just like the attorneys in the Justice Department litigate lots of cases overseen by a Deputy Assistant Attorney General, the role I played.
Okay, thank you. What is the number one issue, do you think, within the AG's jurisdiction that affects ordinary Coloradans? Phil?
The opioid epidemic. I started this campaign. I knew about it. I've gone to every county, most of them multiple times. When I was in the San Luis Valley, when I was on the Eastern Plains, and I start by asking, what's the future of your community? I was stopped dead in my tracks. We can't talk about our future until we take on the opioid epidemic. More Americans died in 2016 of drug overdoses, mostly from opioids, than the Vietnam War and the Iraq War combined. I've talked about the Alamosa County Jail. I've looked hard into this case against Purdue Pharma. Their conduct, it's not a close call. The Attorney General of Oklahoma, a Republican, I might add, called their conduct evil. 15 local governments, including Denver and Pueblo and Huerfano County, they've brought this lawsuit because they demand action. That's the reason I've come to believe we must win this case and use that money creatively to address the opioid epidemic.
George?
There's no doubt that drugs continue to play a large role in the state, including opioids. But listen, what I've seen as a guy on the front lines here of public safety for almost 2.5 decades now is that we have a rampant and unchecked and untreated mental health issue in the state of Colorado. And it manifests itself in so many different ways. It is hard to wrap our hands around it. If we could figure out addiction and mental health, our jails would be empty. If we could figure out how to address kids between the ages of 0 to 6 and 0 to 12, it would make being district attorney awfully boring. But we don't do that. And so every month we seem to be confronted with that nexus between rampant mental health and violence, or rampant mental health and self-harm. The problem is, over the last 4 decades, we have de-emphasized the need to treat and to care for and to provide law enforcement with the tools to do the things necessary to take care of those who are the most vulnerable because of things they can't control going on between their ears. As Attorney General, I'm going to continue to work on efforts to try to decriminalize mental health and to make sure that the resources are there through the legislature to make sure that we have alternatives to this. Thank you.
So, do you think we need a rebuttal?
I do, actually.
Okay.
Let me tell you about JC, who I talked to in Crowley County. What he said is he's having trouble getting drug treatment licensed because our health department has such bureaucratic delays that it makes it hard for him to get more drug treatment out there. And using those interpretive skills, I said, let me look into why it's taking so long. Does the statute actually require you to get these licenses in a way where you do things in sequence, or we could do them all at once? We need creative lawyering with a sense of urgency on this crisis, on a range of fronts, including licensing drug treatment facilities. I'll bring that to the Attorney General's office.
George, do you have any rebuttal here or no? I'm ready to move on.
Let's do it.
Okay, thank you. So we're running out of time. So because we're running out of time, unless the rebuttals are absolutely necessary, we're going to skip those at this point, because these next questions, I don't think they'll be necessary. And for timers, we're going to 60 seconds for answers.
Let's go 15. Let's do it.
You
Let's
can.
Go lightning round.
You
Let's
can't do that.
Let's
so
play two.
I'm not going to propose something impossible.
True, false. True, false.
All right, let's move on. U.S. Attorney Bob Troyer wrote an op-ed this week saying his office is shifting its focus from illegal grow operations to targeting licensed dispensaries, so they're in compliance with state laws that are operating as fronts for illegal drug trafficking. It's a good idea. Support it?
Yeah, look, Bob Troyer is a wonderful U.S. attorney for us. He is a holdover, if you recall, from John Walsh, who stepped down to work on the transition committee, I think, with Ken Salazar for Hillary Clinton, and Bob was a wonderful choice. I read that op-ed piece. There's a lot to like about it, because what he is trying to focus on by word are to take on those commercial enterprises that run afoul of our laws and our regulations. And I'll tell you what, even as the district attorney of the most populous jurisdiction in the state with 90 prosecutors, I'll take every bit of help I can get in this arena. I support that, but I do have a cautionary tale there. I do not want Bob Troyer or any other member of the Department of Justice to come in here and visit their will and their law over the top of us in an area where we have already voted to govern ourselves through a constitutional amendment. That is our business, not theirs. And so if U.S. Attorney Troyer wants to hold our hand as we go into this battle fighting the good fight on behalf of Colorado's laws, rules, and regulations, he's welcome. But if he intends to do something much more than that and take on our lawful businesses, the ones that are complying with the rules and regs, he should expect to get pushback from this Attorney General. Thank you.
Phil, any disagreement?
Jeff Sessions' position on marijuana would take us backwards. Jeff Sessions doesn't believe in criminal justice reform. He believes in putting people in jail who are marijuana users. What the Justice Department, through a good man, is announcing scares me. Because what this means, you can be following the law, you are in compliance, you have a legal operation, and the federal Justice Department is putting its nose in your business. That opens up a range of possible mischief. What I would need to know is how do we limit that sort of oversight, because it has huge potential to go right against what we here in Colorado decided, which is we're not putting marijuana users in jail. We are going to tax it and regulate it, which has led to important benefits like Pueblo County giving scholarships to people in a college, and Eagle County, where they're using the money for mental health services. So I'm really skeptical and concerned.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to guns. Do you support a red flag bill allowing emergency temporary court orders that remove a person's right to possess a gun? What would you do differently due to the proposal's failure in the last legislative session? Phil?
George and I got talking about this last week. I respect and appreciate George's support of the red flag law. That is one piece of several parts of what we need to do on gun safety. We've got to defend and enforce our background check. We've got to go ahead and make sure that we keep our limit on magazine size in place. The gun show loophole has to remain closed. We also need to ban bump stocks and push for a federal limit that would have background checks everywhere. Gun safety includes an important red flag law, but that is not sufficient. As Attorney General, yes, I'd want to lead on that issue, but there's so much more we need to be doing, including managing the Safe to Tell program, ensuring that it operates to help find evidence and concerns that could lead to the next Columbine. And finally, to work on issues around gun storage, because most of the people who die from gun deaths are not homicides, they're suicides.
George?
Look, on the last day of last year, I was in bed debating whether I'd make pancakes or waffles for the kids. And I got called out of that bed, as the sun was coming up, to come out to the back of a bowling alley parking lot at the corner of County Line and University. And as I drove over there, the discussion was, how are we going to try to rescue Deputy Zach Parrish, because nobody knew he'd been murdered. There had been four deputies shot and nearly killed. And it was standing there in that back parking lot with two other great Republicans, Sheriff Tony Spurlock and Dave Walcher. And we discussed the fact that the status quo is not acceptable. And if anybody tells you it is, they're not living in this community and they're not living on this planet. And it was from that that we came to the conclusion that we wanted to do something that would target that horrible nexus between firearms and the dangerously mentally ill. And what I expect, my hope is, any candidate who seeks your support and your vote, you will demand to know, when have you stood up to your party because of something that you thought was right? This was that circumstance where I did that. But honestly, we can do a lot better by changing the 72-hour mental health hold definition of imminent and by investing real resources in mental health facilities for the people that need the treatment. Thank you.
Thank you. So getting another couple quick questions here before we have to wrap this. Do you support Colorado's Blaine Amendment, which prohibits state funds from supporting religious institutions directly or indirectly? Can it be enforced given the Supreme Court's recent decisions? George?
Listen, anything that we do by way of passing laws on us, I start from the position that it is the right thing to do, and that I will find a way to continue to fight for it. I'm very, very concerned about what I perceive to be growing encroachment on our First Amendment rights, and I'm not just talking about the assault on the media, which I disagree with entirely, but I'm talking about on the free expression of will and the free exercise of religion. These are important issues that I want to take on. Before I challenge anything as unconstitutional, before I refuse to defend anything we might do by way of passing laws on ourselves, I want to take a good, hard look at that, because the interests at stake are very, very important to me.
Thanks, Phil. Do you have any comments on that one?
Let me take a note, again, commending the Federal Society, working with ACS the way we do in Colorado. I clerked for two Supreme Court justices, Byron White, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. This is a copy of the Constitution from the ACLU. This is a copy from the Cato Institute. They're both the same. That's what we need here in Colorado. And George's point is absolutely right. The presumption is that legislation passed is constitutional. And the motivation of this legislation was what the First Amendment says, a separation of church and state. We in Colorado do better keeping religion out of politics and politics out of religion. That's what this law's been about, that's what the First Amendment is about, and that's why I will respectfully support our law.
Regardless of the Supreme Court's recent decisions on this, you think it can still be enforced?
I don't believe the current Supreme Court decisions have required it. If the Supreme Court ends up getting to a place when it's so crystal clear, that's a different story.
Okay. So I'm going to tackle one more tough question, then I have just an easy one for you to end with. The Colorado Open Records Act is strict, creating a very short deadline, limiting fees, and imposing large burdens on government entities. At the same time, the media and interest groups often say the process is subject to abuse by the government as well. As Attorney General, what can you do to resolve these problems?
This guy? That guy? This guy?
I don't know.
That guy.
Is it him first? Go ahead. Phil, you go. He's too goofy right now.
George and I both have had to work with the Colorado Open Records Act. He as a district attorney, me as a dean of a law school. And I will tell you, it never occurred to me to play games with it. Because the right thing to do is to be transparent. I have heard the complaint you've made. The first thing an attorney general can do is advise people to follow the law and be transparent. Because we need trust in government. Right now, we're living in a time with more cynicism and mistrust in government than a very long time. And so it's important to follow the law and to be transparent with respect to those Open Records Act requests. And to the extent we believe you need a new model, I know George has proposed some ideas that could have the AG's office playing a role overseeing lawless action. I'm open to that sort of approach. And I would say, just as George has said here, part of what the AG does is be the lawyer working with the legislature. Whether it's on broadband or open records or opioids, we've got expertise in the AG's office. We can work with the legislature as well.
George?
Yeah, look, again, this is another issue where it's not just about the talk, it's about the action, because that's what Colorado's about. We have become the most transparent district attorney's office in the state, not because I thought it was just a neat idea, but because you can't hold government accountable unless you know what the hell government's doing. And you have to have the ability to question that. So we have put things online that no DA's office has ever done. We've made it possible to do an Open Records Act request without ever setting foot in our building, without ever having to drop off a check. You can do it all online, and we never charge media for their requests. We've also put on our entire budget, but also our operating check register, every forfeiture we've ever taken, every dollar we've ever spent from it. We put on the demographics of those people that go to prison. We put everything up online, and yet this law is inadequate because that relies upon someone like me to make those decisions. We don't have a good appellate process when the government agency tells you, no, you can't have those records. So what I've proposed, and I've kind of crowdsourced this, is come up with legislation that would create a situation where you for free or a very low cost could go to the Attorney General and say, hey, that DA's office, that CU Law School, they said no to my Open Records Act, I think they're wrong. And the Attorney General would provide that low cost, no cost appeal to insist that you have access over your government. I've done that not as a matter of word, but as a matter of action, and I will continue that as your Attorney General. Thank you.
All right. We have a couple random questions here. I want to know, how has this campaign changed you? George, get this one first.
Yeah, this is tough.
I thought this was one of the easy ones.
No, it sucks. Yeah, I'm telling you. It is very difficult to have a full-time job, a job where you are called upon to do things like today, to review the body cam on an officer-involved shooting where a member of our community was killed by law enforcement. And then to deal with questions about how to resolve different cases, plea bargains, the decision about what to do about this guy in Nevada who's fighting extradition, who DNA has tied to a triple homicide in our jurisdiction from 1984. And then to balance that against a woman who's a small business owner and a kick-ass small business owner who has had to take on the burden of raising four incredible children, 15, 14, 11, and 8, and oh, by the way, continue to be an Army colonel and the state's judge advocate general who gets called on during Florence four times to leave all of that, this included, and go down to Northcom and try to figure out a way to help. The politics piece, it's meaningful, don't get me wrong. There's been a lot rewarding about this. But this is soul-sucking. Tomorrow, I'll be in Weld County talking with another group of good citizens while my boy is playing single elimination playoff baseball at age 8. That breaks my heart, man. I'm glad we have this process. I'm honored to be a part of it. But don't fool yourselves. There is very little that is truly fun about this part of the process at this time on the calendar. Thank you.
So,
let me first thank George for your service. We need people who can serve. Thank you, George. And then I can say, I feel your pain. My daughter's playing volleyball tonight. My son said to me the other night, Daddy, when is the campaign over? And I got into this knowing that our democracy only works when people put themselves forward. And this has been the most interesting, inspiring, and challenging thing I've done. Now I'll tell you, being a law school dean is more painful. People often said the faculty politics are so vicious because the stakes are so small. The people I have met across our great state, they inspire me. We've taken videos of some of them, like Honey in Alamosa. And we've put them on our website. Because when I'm Attorney General, I'm going to remember everyone I met in this campaign, and I'm committed. This is not only about a campaign, it's about building relationships to be a better Attorney General. That's how it's affected me.
Thank you. Well, as I said, it's the second debate I've done with these two, and I think we can all agree we've got two very fine candidates here. Thanks a lot. Thank you.